Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a workplace community of remote workers, freelancers, and entrepreneurs. Gravitate provides all the space and amenities necessary so you can focus on your work, creativity, and growth. With locations in Des Moines and Valley Junction, learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Governor Reynolds has made K-12 education a priority this legislative session. Iowa lawmakers are busy crafting proposals, so this hour we're going to try to get a handle on what's being discussed, the framework that's being set down and debated. And I'm with my co-host, as we have on Mondays, Katarina Sestarek, our state government reporter of Iowa Public Radio at the Statehouse Law Library. Good morning to you, Katarina.
Hi, Ben.
Good afternoon. We're just in the afternoon. Usually it's a guest that makes that mistake. It's mine this time around. Katarina, we want to talk with lawmakers in just a minute. We'll hear a conversation that I had with the governor recorded at the end of last week. Let's start off, though, by asking listeners to join our conversation, especially if you have concerns or hopes or questions about funding for K-12 education in the state. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Joining us, first of all, Rose Green. She is founder of Parents for Great Iowa Schools, joining us by phone. Hi, Rose.
Good afternoon, Ben and Katarina.
Good afternoon to you. We wanted to start off with your perspective, because this is really the perspective that matters, what parents think of their schools. You have three kids, I understand, Rose, all in the Des Moines district schools, the Des Moines public schools, right?
That is correct.
Tell us a little bit about your background and what your organization is aiming to do.
Well, thank you, Ben. I appreciate the opportunity to share a parent's perspective. For us, it's all about our kids and their future. It's very personal. And that's why we started our group. And really, the inaugural issue that our group organized behind at a statewide level was funding. So it's great to be able to talk about this.
Katarina, perhaps you can jump in here before we ask Rose a few more questions and tell us, in simple terms, where do we stand now in this legislative session with K-12 education set as a priority?
Lawmakers are sort of on the cusp of passing a funding deal for K-12 education that was worked out by Republican State House leaders. So it's about a 2.06% increase to base K-12 funding, and there's some additional funding in there to reduce historical inequities in per-student funding and in transportation costs. That total funding increase would be up to about $90 million for the next school year, and you have some Democrats and education advocates saying it's not quite enough, but then others who are saying it's a much better situation than the past 2 years, with about 1% increases in each of the past 2 years. And the House of Representatives is scheduled to vote on two K-12 funding bills this afternoon.
Mm. Okay, so Rose, there's some of the basics, and I'm sure you've been into it in much more detail. You've been lobbying lawmakers in Des Moines, I understand.
Well, we've been lobbying lawmakers in Des Moines, and we were actually up at the State House speaking with legislators from all over the state last week. And this surely was a topic.
Okay, so given the basis that Katarina just laid out there, what are your top priorities? What are your concerns? What do you see here? Are you generally pleased?
Well, I would say it's an improvement. I mean, you just look at the numbers, and it's higher than last year, and it's higher than the last couple of years. But it's an improvement that definitely has consequences. And I can just take Des Moines, for example. So we will have around a 2% increase. And we will still be cutting $25 million from our budget.
That $25 million?
Approximately $25 million from our budget just in the next year. And so, too, as a parent, when I hear that and knowing that the majority of our budget is people, it's teachers, it's administrators, it's school counselors, it's everyone that helps these children prepare to learn and engage, and they become college or not college ready, or ready to take on that next level after high school. And I hear $25 million, and I get worried about what are the cuts of people, and as a result, the cuts of some curriculum and some extracurricular activities. Mm-hmm. I'm concerned about that. I think you can't not acknowledge that it's much much more than last year, but I think it's still going to have some negative consequences.
Mm-hmm. With three kids at the Des Moines Public Schools there, Rose, what class sizes do your kids face there?
Well, I feel that Des Moines is being very proactive in trying to protect class sizes at the elementary level. It seems to be a focus. But we have to, there's consequences, like I said, and we're seeing, for example, our high school cut 14 teachers last year. And so I worry, after 14 teachers, what can we absorb after that at our high school level? And so we're definitely seeing the larger class sizes in the middle school and the high school in order to protect those elementary and that foundational learning.
Mm-hmm. And what will you be specifically going forward now as you see the process, these funding bills being passed by various committees? What will your eyes be on in the coming days and weeks?
Well, we will definitely, and that's why we were up at the State House last week speaking with Representative Dulacek and Senator Sinclair as the leaders in the House and the Senate. And it seems as if it's established. It seems like they're, you know, I would almost say this week is about the formalities, but I feel I got the sense that there was no budging of that, and they're very pleased with that number, and that it was just time for the districts to yet again problem solve and figure out how they were going to make that increase work.
Mm-hmm. Rose Green, you're founder of Parents for Great Iowa Schools. Give us a little background. How many people are in your organization, Parents for Great Iowa Schools, and where are they located? Primarily around Des Moines?
Actually, we have representation and members in all 99 counties across the state. So we are just truly a group of parents where it was very personal, and our concerns about our kids, and not just our kids, but all kids throughout the state, and their workforce readiness and their future. And so we felt that we really needed a perspective up there that was just solely about the kids. And so that's where we started out, as just a really small committee, more centered in the Des Moines area. And then with the benefits of social media, we were able to spread out. And we have a website, Parents for Great Iowa Schools. We have about 6,000 people signed up for a newsletter that we send out, which they can do through our website. We have a strong presence on Facebook and Twitter, and it allows us to engage with parents all across the state. And we took a tour last year, and we went to about 5 or 6 communities and met with dozens of parents so that we could hear the issues that we weren't experiencing in the Des Moines area that might have been maybe more of a rural issue or just something unique to their community schools.
Mm-hmm. Tell us before we say goodbye, how can people find out more about Parents for Great Iowa Schools? Where's the contact?
Well, mm-hmm. You can find us on the web. You can just Google Parents for Great Iowa Schools, and you'll find our website, and that will link you to our social media. And if you sign up for our newsletters, that's primarily how we communicate with our parents that are interested in advocating for their kids.
And Rose, before we go, and in a few minutes we'll be talking with some Iowa lawmakers, a Democrat and a Republican. What would your message be in simple terms for those crafting these bills?
Sure. Absolutely. This is about our kids and their Iowa's future workforce. And my question is, are we serving them, and are we finding a nonpartisan solution to serve them best in the needs of global economy and 21st century learning?
Okay. Thank you very much. Rose Green, founder of Parents for Great Iowa Schools. We appreciate your time, Rose.
Thank you so much.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with my co-host, Katarina Sestarik, our state government reporter here at IPR. In just a minute, we will get to the legislators here. But first of all, I had the chance to talk the end of last week with Governor Reynolds about K-12 education. Governor Reynolds, as you know, on Monday, our program will focus on K-12 education. You have listed K-12 education as one of your top priorities. Before we get into a bit of what's been proposed thus far this session, tell us why K-12 education is such a key focus for you.
Well, a strong foundation in education is key to any state's success, and we have a strong foundation to build on. This is the future of the state of Iowa, and we want to make sure that we're doing everything that we can to prepare our young people for, you know, not only the jobs of today, but the jobs of tomorrow. And as we see technology and just the digital information stage that we live in today, we need to make sure that our education system is reflecting those changes, so that we're preparing kids to be continuous learners and to be adaptive to a environment that's going to continue to change with technology and innovation.
Let me dig into the numbers, if I could, with you, Governor Reynolds. Sure. A funding deal proposed by a Republican panel in the legislature comes at it with an additional, well, just over $76 million for K-12 education. It seems to fall below the request you had of nearly $90 million during your condition of the state address. What's your reaction to that funding level?
Well, really, the numbers that I have is more with the SSA. It's we were at $89.6 million, and they're at $89.3 million. So there's not a lot of difference. The way that we've gone about it is they ended up putting additional funding in transportation. I had $11.4 million to reduce the disparity in transportation costs. They came in with $19 million. I had said when I put my SSA numbers forward, 2.3%. I think they came in at 2.1%. But I said if they're going to put some funding into the per pupil equity, which is also an issue that we're trying to address, I would be willing to take a look at that. And they did. So they put $3 million into the per pupil equity. They put $19 million into transportation, and then they did, I think, 2.1 million on was the percentage that they arrived at. We were at originally at 2.3, and that doesn't even include other things that we're looking at, which is I've asked for $1 million in new money to STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. I've also asked for $3 million to help educate our teachers to identify early signs of mental illness. And it appears that we're seeing some really good movement on SAVE, which is the penny sales tax, which is set to expire here relatively soon. And that's something I know that school districts support very heavily, because they've actually, with the expiration date, it makes it harder and harder for them to bond out because of the expiration date. So we're seeing positive movement in that too. So all of those, I think, really address that, you know, that we are interested, or we are continuing to make K-12 education a priority with the investment. I think with the money that's been invested, that doesn't include the last few things that I just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at $845 million in new money since 2011, and that doesn't include the training for mental illness. That doesn't include the $1 million in STEM, or SAVE is not included in that dollar amount.
Give us an idea, Governor, of how this will be funded. Where will the revenue come for these increases?
Well, the good news is we have a growing economy because of the decisions that we've made. We've put pro-growth policies in place. We've reduced taxes. I was out in the state last week. I met with eight separate businesses. Every one of them have seen growth over the last 5 years, significant growth over the last three. Many was double-digit growth. They're projecting that going forward. They just need workforce, and so that's an opportunity for Iowans. But, you know, as we continue to grow our economy, our budget is balanced. We have the cash reserves are full, and we've got some significant balances. And so that allows us, by the policies that we put in place, we can continue to invest in, you know, our future and in policies that will continue to grow the economy. And that's why I support Future Ready Iowa, which is all about training Iowans and making sure our kids have the skills. So that doesn't even include, again, that's money that can go into the K-12 system through work-based learning, apprenticeship programs, computer science, professional development. There's additional ways through the Future Ready Iowa where we could even infuse some more money into our middle schools and high schools.
Mm-hmm. In K-12 education, talk a little bit about addressing the inequities, the historical inequities in transportation costs. Some school districts, it just costs a lot more money because they're rural districts, right?
I know, and that's why we put $19 million to address that so that we could, because that money was coming out of the classroom and going to transporting our students. You know, the other thing is, as we see some of the consolidation, another priority of mine is Empower Rural Iowa. So businesses, and these weren't just in urban cities, these are in small communities across the state, small, medium, and large businesses that are growing. So if we can make sure that our communities have the workforce, have the housing, have the broadband connectivity, we're going to see these main streets grow and become vibrant, and we're going to see our young people staying, which is going to help support our schools, because we do fund on a per pupil basis, and as we see more and more people leave some of these rural communities, it makes it really hard to support. So if we can grow the economy, if we can get the workforce, if we can make sure they have the connectivity, and with the programs, I talked about the apprenticeship program, which matches kids in high school with the community colleges and with the businesses. They're going right out of high school into this business. And again, that's building relationships and keeping those kiddos in the state of Iowa. And so all of that kind of fits together to help address that.
You are governing a unified legislature, both chambers in the hands of the Republicans. So you've been talking about your vision, your priority for education in K through 12. How do you think these proposals are being received, will be received by the Democrats?
Well, actually, I said in the condition of the state, I think we have an opportunity to build on the bipartisan initiative that we passed last year. In a pretty politically divisive environment, Iowa has done it a little bit differently. We've found a way to bring Republicans and Democrats together and to put Iowans first. And we did that last year with the Future Ready Iowa initiative. We did that with the comprehensive mental health care reform, with the opioid bill that we passed. All three of those, by the way, passed unanimously. Every single legislator voted for them, both Republican and Democrat. But affordable health care, water quality, a lot of other issues passed with bipartisan support. So we passed the big policy last year, and this is the year to implement it and to put the funding behind the policy that we passed last year. So I believe this is a year where we can continue that bipartisan, those bipartisan efforts, and really implement the good policy that a lot of people worked on last year.
Give us a few more details, if you could, on the per pupil equity, because that's really a disparity that you're trying to address here. The problem here in Iowa is that some pupils get just more money than others, right?
Well, there is an equalizer in there, but I mean, so they started that last year, started to address it, where they put an additional $5 in, and if you don't meet the level, or if you do, or at the level, then you put that into property tax reduction, so we can reduce the reliance on property taxes. If you're not where you need to be, then it would plug into the per pupil funding. So we did it last year with $5, then that rolls into the formula, and then they added another $5 in the recommendation by the House and the Senate this year. So we're continuing to address that, and that money rolls into the formula, so that is ongoing. And then I think they're taking a look at, with the transportation funding, that doesn't roll into the formula, but I think they're talking about making that a standing categorical, which would mean that you would have to remove it. It would stay in the budget unless it was removed by the legislature.
Governor Kim Reynolds, thank you for taking time to give us your vision of K through 12 education here in Iowa. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
That conversation from last Friday that I had with Governor Kim Reynolds. If you just joined us, it's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, focusing on education funding this hour. Ben Kiefer with my co-host Katarina Sestarek at the State House Law Library in Des Moines. Katarina, before we introduce our lawmakers who will be with us for the rest of the hour, give us quickly your impressions of that short conversation, that outlined by Governor Kim Reynolds on the state of education funding and her vision.
Sure, a couple things. The governor referenced a growing economy when talking about where is the revenue going to come from to pay for these education increases. I did just want to note that in the past couple years, the state has had revenue shortfalls, and that has contributed to the around 1% increases in the past 2 years. This year, the revenue is looking a lot healthier, which is why they're able to get it up over 2% for an education funding increase, and also a reference to bipartisan work on education funding. I would say Democrats haven't been super happy with the level of education funding in the past few years and have consistently sort of criticized that and asked for more funding for education.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's turn quickly to the guests you have at the State House Law Library there before we come up on a break. We have about 3 or 4 minutes left. We have Senator Tim Kreyenbrink. He's a Republican in the state Senate, chair of the Education Appropriations Committee. Also, Representative Ras Smith, a Democrat, ranking member of the House Education Committee. Representative Smith and Senator Kreyenbrink, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
With the GOP in control, let's start out with you, Senator Kreyenbrink. How do you feel about the budget package that you brought forward?
Well, I think it's something that we have worked on and is acceptable for the budget that's available this year, as well as sustainable for years to come. And that was our main goal. Several years ago, we got into a situation, and I'm going to have to disagree with Katarina on this, because we didn't really have a revenue problem. We had a spending problem. Our revenue has been going up by over 3% the past 2 years, and we've just been spending more money than we've been taking in. Over the past several years, we've had to de-appropriate over $250 million, even though our revenue has been increasing by about 3%. So what we needed to do is we basically had to give back some of the things that we've bought by not funding them anymore and setting a new funding base where it's acceptable and sustainable for the state of Iowa. We've now got ourselves to that point where we feel we have our hands around our budget, just as though we ask our people at home to have their hands around their own budget so they don't spend more than they take in. And currently, we are not spending more than we take in. That then in turn gave us a surplus for 2018-19 year. And hopefully we can go forward from there, learning something from our past and being more responsible with our taxpayers' money.
We have about a minute before we go to break, and we'll, of course, have both of you on in the second half hour as well. But to you, Representative Ras Smith, a Democrat ranking member of the House Education Committee, tell us, what is your reaction to what you've heard thus far from the governor and also from Senator Kreyenbrink?
Well, I think our gains in our transportation equity is a big win for the whole state of Iowa. But at the same time, I think when we're addressing consecutive years of deficits, that a 2.06% increase in SSA doesn't help to actually bring us to where we need to be to operate. I think it maybe slowly helps to stop the bleeding, but I still think we'll be having to lay off teachers and really not making the strides we need to be globally competitive in the classrooms.
Mm-hmm. The governor described work with Democrats as bipartisan. Is that the way you see it, Representative Smith?
I would say in regards to setting SSA, that was something that I think was set before session started. That was a conversation that I was not a part of, but would have loved to be. I think that our proposal for a 3% increase in SSA, we could have come to a more mutual understanding of what we wanted that to look like had we had bipartisan conversations about that prior to session starting.
Okay, we have to take a short break. We'll be back with Representative Ras Smith, Democrat, and Republican Senator Tim Kreyenbrink. We're talking about education funding. If you'd like to join our conversation, we'd love to have you raise your hopes, your concerns, your questions for our guests as we talk about education funding in the state. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Ben Kiefer with Katarina Sestarek back in just a moment.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a workplace community of remote workers, freelancers, and entrepreneurs. Gravitate provides all the space and amenities necessary so you can focus on your work, creativity, and growth. With locations in Des Moines and Valley Junction, learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR.
So good you could join us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, talking about K-12 education funding this hour, along with my co-host at the State House Law Library, Katarina Sestarek. And we have with us two lawmakers in the State House Law Library, Representative Ras Smith, a Democrat. He's a ranking member of the House Education Committee. And Senator Tim Kreyenbrink. He's a Republican, chair of the Education Appropriations Subcommittee in the Senate. If you'd like to join our conversation with your hopes, your concerns, your questions about K-12 funding education funding. What have you been experiencing? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Email us, river@iowapublicradio.org. Katerina, let's talk to our lawmakers a moment or two. You've been covering these issues. I'm sure you have plenty of questions. What would you like to ask?
Representative Smith, you mentioned at the end of the first half of the show that Democrats would like to see a 3% increase in school funding rather than the 2.1% that's been decided on or will be voted on today. Do you think there is actually enough revenue right now in the state to increase funding 3%?
I believe there is. I think a 3% ask is something that's realistic and reasonable. I think any time where, you know, over the past couple of years we've had to deappropriate, the top 1% has gained over $100 million in with our new tax structure. So I think it's about the way we prioritize our revenue, how we prioritize our money. And from our perspective, it doesn't make sense to put the top 1% ahead of students in regards to how we finance our education, making sure that we do have that pool of skilled workers to pull from in the jobs that we have and we know we'll need filled in the future.
Senator Kreinbrink, what do you think of the 3% ask?
Well, every 1% is about $41 million is what it actually comes down to. And I guess as far as the tax bill that was passed last year, it really doesn't come into effect until this year. The main reason the tax bill was actually put into place is to more or less couple with the federal government. The federal government, by cutting the taxes on the middle class, has created less deductions on our state taxes, which then makes it possible that we would pay more in our state taxes. As a legislature and as a Republican lawmaker, we didn't want to collect money off of the federal tax refund or rebate, and we thought it was important to keep that money back in the hands of those who had earned it, which is our constituents. So basically, like I said before, we feel this is reasonable, sustainable. We didn't want to get ourselves in a situation where we found ourselves 3 and 4 years ago.
In addition to our lawmakers, let's have Margaret Buckton join our conversation. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Ben. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I have in my notes you're an urban and rural schools advocate, also school finance expert. Perhaps you, before you weigh in on your with your reaction to what's been heard so far, tell us a little bit about your perspective, who you represent.
Sure. So with the Urban Education Network, that's 17 of the largest school districts in the state, almost 40% of the student enrollment, but a much larger percentage of minority students and non-English speaking students and students that come from low-income families. The Rural School Advocates of Iowa now have 101 school district members. They tend to be smaller. Interestingly, they have a lot in common with more poverty in common with our urban partners than they might have had 10, 15 years ago. Both of those organizations are actually registered in favor of this proposal of 2.06%, and that's because of the other funding parts of the package that are really critical to making that work. But before I get into that, from the school finance perspective, Iowa school funding formula is complicated. And when we talk about the per pupil increase of 2.06%, some folks think that that means all school districts are going to get 2% more money. Mm-hmm. And that's not the way it works. With this proposal, we'll have 101 districts in Iowa that actually see budget reductions. And that is even taking into account that there will be 117 with that budget guarantee mechanism where they can tax their local property taxpayers for at least a 1% increase.
So explain how does that happen? Well, you can have an increase and some school districts get less.
Because they have declining enrollment. And if they lose more students, if they lose more than 2.06% of their enrollment and the per pupil amount goes up 2.06%, they're actually seeing less budget. And it accumulates over years. But what you find out is you don't have the whole second grade leave at the same time. So you may not be able to get rid of Mrs. Smith in the second grade class just because you have declining enrollment. It hits in different patches.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So Senator Kreinbrink, maybe you can respond to that. Is there anything that lawmakers can or should do about that declining enrollment, declining budget issue?
Well, I think that's part of the reason why we did the per pupil as well as the transportation equity. We felt that there are schools out there that are on budget guarantee, and you know, we thought that, you know, if we give a 2.8% or 3% increase, you know, that affects maybe a few more schools, but not a lot. Whereas we felt if we put that money in a per pupil or transportation equity, you know, the transportation equity is kind of interesting, and Governor Reynolds didn't go here, but the school that spends the most on transportation equity or transportation in the state of Iowa is a school of about $1,041 just to get each child to their front door. The least spending is $41. So there's $1,000 that school can spend on every child that comes through the door that has a lower transportation cost that they can then offer classes or opportunities to these students that our rural districts can't. So we felt that if we can start to move that up where we're closer to the state average so that every student coming into that door is funded, you know, the same way, then we're not giving maybe some of our urban schools that do not have the costs as much as a Pocahontas area that's got 500 and some square miles, you know. So it's those type of things that, you know, you have lawmakers from all over the state of Iowa. I mean, we have urban areas, we have rural areas, so we've got people that are vested in every single corner of the state of Iowa, and that's where we had to negotiate to say, okay, this helps us, but this doesn't. So we need something that does help us. And I think overall, the budget that we have right now, it makes sense. Sure, would we like to give more? I don't know if you're aware of this, but in the state of Iowa, $7.1 billion goes to K-12 spending through local, state, and federal funding. That's $14,600 per student. In a class of 22, it's $321,000 per classroom, okay? That money has not gone down since 2011. So it has been a priority of ours, and I think a lot of your listeners probably don't know that that's the average amount. Some classes get more, some classes get less. Just makes difference what the needs are, you know, in that classroom. So those are interesting, you know, piece of information out there that probably a lot of your listeners knew.
Quickly, Margaret, do you want to put some of those numbers in context? Because I know there are different ways of looking at some of those.
Oh, certainly. So 14,000 is a number that would encompass all revenues. And those revenues include things that even parents pay, like for school lunch or for textbooks. When you look at actual school expenditures of tax dollars, it's closer to $11,200 per pupil. But some pupils, like your level 3 special education student who has severe and profound needs, that student may require $180,000 to $200,000 of supports in just 1 year. So when it gets down to the average parent figuring out what that means, it's hard to get a grasp on that, right? So I looked at the total increase. We've heard several people talk about $845 million since 2011, right? That's the amount of state money that's now in the formula if this proposal passes at the 2.06%. The formula is a mix of state and local money. So part of this, $95 million of that, is simply the state taking over what used to be property taxes. So the teacher, the classroom, doesn't see a penny of that $95 million. The taxpayer realizes that benefit. There's another $92 million or so for the growth in almost 20,000 students. We have more students enrolled. You have to provide a teacher, a desk, a classroom, you know, mm-hmm. all the supports that they need. And then there's another program that we've invested in, the Teacher Leadership and Compensation Plan, now at $162.5 million. That's great support for improving instruction, but it's not providing a classroom teacher. So if you kind of set aside those things and really focus on the remainder, the $450 million remaining for students, divide it by 9 years, because that's over a 9-year period, divide it by the enrollment in the state of just over 500,000 kids, and get it down to a day's worth of instruction, divide by 180 days, it's 58 cents per student per day. Now, I think of Rose and the Parents for Great Iowa Schools thinking of $845 million. That's a huge number. How do you get a grasp on that? But 58 cents per student per day may be a pencil. You know, if a textbook costs $60, it's really hard to get to. How do we balance the budget at the school level with that kind of resource?
Margaret Buckton is with us as we talk about K-12 education funding on this edition of River to River. Margaret Buckton is an urban and rural schools advocate and school finance expert affiliated with the Urban Education Network, Rural School Advocates of Iowa, and Iowa School Finance Information Services. Glad to have you with us, Margaret. That's an understatement. There are so many moving parts, so many numbers here. It's very easy to be confused. In fact, it's difficult to not be confused. I think you'd agree with that, Margaret.
Absolutely.
Thank you for helping us understand with it. Our lawmakers, Representative Roz Smith, a Democrat, and Senator Tim Kreienbrink, a Republican. Let's get to our callers. There's been plenty of action on our phones, and people would like to join in our conversation with concerns, questions, hopes for education, K through 12 in Iowa. Aaron is joining us from Marion. Welcome to the program, and thanks for waiting, Aaron.
Thank you. Well, I am an educator. And I am a product of the Iowa education system. I am calling today because I am concerned about overcrowding in our schools. My children attend Indian Creek Elementary in Marion, Iowa, which is part of the Linmar Community School District. And the building that they attend school currently has had some portables added in the last 2 years to accommodate the overcrowding in their building. And so my daughter, who's now in sixth grade, she's now at the middle school, she attended fifth grade in a portable, which I have to give credit to her teachers. You know, they really supported those students and made the transition and made it pretty seamless for the kids. This year, now all four sections of fifth grade are in portables in front of the school building. If you think about the weather and the ice and the snow and keeping those walkways clear for students, that's something that, you know, is a concern in my mind just as a parent, but also looking at then ahead at future. Linmar bonded in September of 2018 to build two new 5-6 buildings, which would then take fifth grade out of the elementaries currently and would move the sixth grade that are in the middle schools now to this new intermediate level building. But even still, looking at the growth and the projections of growth for the building, my thought is by the time these buildings are built in the next couple of years, then the fourth grade will probably be out in the portables. And so with the amount of money that schools are getting, I guess it's just a concern to me as a parent, but also mm-hmm. as a teacher. You know, I've seen budget cuts left and right, from materials to teachers to programs. You know, in my buildings, and my husband's also an educator as well, you know,
Aaron,
we've seen it in
yeah.
both of our districts.
I want to give time for a response and for our other callers, but I think we've got the gist of yeah. what you said, and we share your concerns. Margaret, you know, is this a concern that parents, school districts would have outside of Marion? I imagine it is. It's hard to plan long-term, and, you know, those portables are a temporary solution, but you have to know what years in advance what funding is going to be like, and if you want to have a permanent structure, right?
Absolutely. So we've got some suburban districts all around the state and a few rural districts that have what I would call fast-growing enrollment. The way Iowa School Finance works, the decision that these bills are making now is about the funding of the education program, the teachers, the staff, those kinds of things. You heard Governor Reynolds in her comments talk about extending the SAVE fund, or the sales tax for school infrastructure. That pays for the buildings in partnership with the local property taxpayer in a fast-growing place like Linmar that approves a bond issue. That's why we see this as really a three-legged stool of funding. You've got to have the increase in the per-pupil cost. You have to have the investment in equity, in this case, transportation and funding formula. Down the road, maybe it's about poverty or ELL, English language learners. But you also need to have adequate resources for facilities. And that's why many of your urban suburban districts are very supportive, as are the rurals, with extending that state penny for school infrastructure to 2051 as being proposed in both chambers this year.
And Senator Kreienbrink, those three legs of the stool, as Margaret described, are those things that you think would all pass the Senate? Do those have support in the Senate this year?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that we look at as far as rural as well as urban in the state of Iowa, is that we want to make it easier for our administrators and our school boards to operate. And by doing that, we want to take away as much of the clutter as we possibly can and give as much local control to them. The reason why SAVE kind of got itself in trouble. There were several schools, and we have a senator or two in our caucus that weren't happy with the way that they were using the SAVE dollars, whether it would be a dugout football field or a $1 million football field that they put in. And really, it's not so much that SAVE is paying for the schools. It allows the schools to bond. So actually, the community is actually paying for those schools to be built, but they're able to bond or loan against that one penny. So I think it's important that as legislators, we give our schools, if we can't fund them maybe to the extent that they feel they needed to be funded, maybe we need to give them the tools that it takes then to grow their communities. If the previous caller, if the problem is that, you know, you're outgrowing your schools, then your school board should be making the decisions. If they're going to build a building and they already think that fourth grade is going to be in portables, then they should have been talking about this 3-4 years ago. You know, I mean, this isn't something that you build a building then blame it on the legislature because they don't have enough room for the fourth graders. I mean, that isn't fair. And you know, because the community is what builds the schools, not the state.
Okay. And there's been some talk of the equity that is being sought for transportation and per pupil differences across districts. But I know there's also been some concerns about there's certain districts that are maybe higher poverty or have more English language learners. And those students are more, I mean, they're just more expensive, the services that are needed for them. Maybe Representative Smith, is there anything that you think the legislature should be doing to fill those inequities or to try to solve those with funding?
Well, I think the first thing that the legislature has to do is acknowledge that being an issue. I come from a district and I'm 2 months removed from working in one of the highest need schools in the state. So, you know, we have 20% of our students with an IEP. So 1 out of every 5 students comes in that classroom with additional resources needed. And a lot of times our schools, not even specifically urban areas, I think this has been seen across the state, they're more of triage centers, right? We have to come in and make sure the student is safe first, take care of their basic needs, and then we have to educate. All those practices are expensive. But at this point in time in our state, we can't afford to have any students who fall through the cracks. We need them all to be prepared to join the workforce. And I think the state has to consider that being the problem of the future. We're really reactive in the way that we're addressing the transportation inequity because it's been a problem. It's something that could have been addressed in years prior, but we use one-time funding. So I think we have to be more forward-thinking, look at the problems of the next decade and address those now, or at least start to put things in place now so that we can adequately and effectively address those going forward.
Finishing up our hour with Representative Roz Smith, Senator Tim Kreyenbrink, and Margaret Buckton on education funding. Let's squeeze in one more call and then have some concluding comments from our guest. EJ in Des Moines, welcome to the program. I want to ask you to be very brief. We're coming up on the end of our hour, but we're sure glad you're with us. Do you have a question?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you again so much for your program and to talk about the importance of K-12 education. As a parent of a 6-year-old, it's something I think of every day. But also I'm somebody that just got done paying for preschool and early child care. And my concern is that in conversations like this, we constantly neglect the importance of preschool and child care investments. The condition of the state address, Governor Reynolds actually mentioned preschool through 12 education as part of her budget proposal. But that was left off of the conversation here today. Included in that conversation around early child care, the Future Ready Iowa initiative included child care in one of the things that she would like to fix. You know, so I think Rep Smith, Senator Kreyenbrink, and all the other folks that are on here, I would really like to know, I would really like to encourage Iowa Public Radio and all of our lawmakers to not forget our birth to 5 age range, because it's so critical to make sure that children are successful in school and in life.
EJ, thank you very much. And I know you've read the same scientific studies that it is a crucial time in a child's life. I'm afraid we have a crucial shortage of minutes at this point. Just a couple of minutes left. I'll ask, let's just go around to each of our guests have you finish up with concluding thoughts. Perhaps you'd like to respond to the caller, but, you know, really 30, 40 seconds to each. Margaret, can you sum up what's on your mind at this point?
Sure. Real quickly, preschool does get a 0.5 or 50% weighting, so that increase of 2.06 would also apply to preschool funding, and we absolutely have to invest in those youngest learners. Next year's revenue estimate for the state is a 1.9% growth in state revenue. So a 2.06% increase in that cost per pupil exceeds that benchmark. We're hoping that in the out year, when we're looking at 2021 next year, if we return to a more normal 4% revenue growth after we phased in that tax cut, we could see a healthier increase in the cost per student going down the road. We really encourage the legislature to look at all of these sources of funding as that budget package.
Very quickly, a concluding remark from Representative Roz Smith.
Yes, thank you. I would just challenge listeners and everyone to think of this holistically, understanding that we can't really separate the part from the whole. And we're challenging our AAAs to really help with our youth mental health initiative, but we're looking at an additional $15 million cut to our AAAs as well. So we can't really separate one part from the other. If we really want to be globally competitive, we have to put our money where our mouth is and make sure that education is a priority beyond just the numbers.
Okay, Senator Tim Kreinbrink, I can afford 30 seconds for you.
Well, I can easily fill that up. Well, I just want to thank you all for the opportunity to be here, and I think this is great. It's a great way to educate our state and keep their thumb on what's happening in the education system. We'll continue to work hard. We know that we have educators out there in schools and superintendents and school boards that are doing great work for our state of Iowa, and we want to continue to do that.
We had so much to discuss. We did get through quite a bit of it, but thank you so much for helping us understand. Senator Tim Kreinbrink, Representative Ross Smith, and Margaret Buckton. Also, of course, thanks to my co-host, Katarina Sestarek at the State House Law Library. Until next Monday, Katarina, thanks.
Thanks, Ben.
Coming up tomorrow on the program, Cal Newport is my guest, the author of Digital Minimalism, Choosing a Focused Life in a Noisy World. Interesting conversation tomorrow, especially if you're having trouble wrestling with your digital needs. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for tuning in to River to River.